Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad for your time and attention. And if you'd like to join our conversations on the Exchange today, you're not just welcome to, you're encouraged to, because we'll be talking about John F. Kennedy and the assassination. By now, just about every program in the broadcasting business has spent at least a little time talking about the coming 50th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. November 22nd, 1963 was, like this year, a Friday, and a Black Friday at that. We'll work in two pathways for our discussion of JFK. For one, Jeff Golden joins us to talk about his book, Imagining a World in Which JFK Survived the Shooting. It's called Unafraid, a Novel of the Possible. And the other, we want to hear from you as we go along. Tell us your memories of November 22nd, 50 years ago, and your thoughts about the days before and since, and even consider what might have been, as Jeff Golden does. Numbers on the Exchange, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. And our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Jeff Golden is not just the author of Unafraid, a Novel of the Possible, but the former host of this program, who actually brought me in as the backup host. Thanks again for that, and welcome back to the Exchange.
It's really good to be here. Thanks, Jeff.
So you write in the book, the book is from 2008. It's been out for about 5 years now. You write in the introduction about the people that you talked to when you first began stammering about it. So what actually got you stammering about the concept for Unafraid?
Well, it was as huge an event for me as everyone else. I was 13 years old, and like anybody, I think over 5 years old at the time, can tell you exactly where I was. And that speaks to the depth of the shock. And I think it stands unique. Arguably, 9/11 is in the same category. But in terms of how quickly and dramatically it changed the course of history, and especially changed our sense of what America is, historical changes don't happen that way, that dramatically, that suddenly. So it was natural, and I'm certainly not the only one to do it, to think over the years, to wonder over the years, what would the world look like? What would the country look like? What would our lives look like had that not happened? And I thought about that for a number of years, actually until 9/11 happened, and then something kind of clicked in that finally got me in front of the computer to write the book.
Had there been a bunch of ideas you'd scratched down? I'm curious to know if this really was a case of parking yourself at the keyboard and forcing yourself to think about a world with a living JFK after November 22nd of 63, or if you'd actually been keeping little bits of paper over the way and thinking, well, this would have happened if JFK had been around.
Not really, no. Once I sat there and kind of let the characters loose, and most of them are actual historical characters, you have sort of a recombination of the Kennedy family and Castro and Martin Luther King, and the Beatles make a cameo in there, which was sort of the fun part of the book. Once they got going, they kind of took the story, and it took about a year and a half to write, and it actually flowed pretty well.
So the biggest difference is that JFK himself would have been changed by the episode, and he's the one who would have been unafraid, right?
Yes, that's the key, and the book takes its title from something he said, that the historical JFK said that struck me as I was writing the book. A friend sent me this. He said, this was at the 20th anniversary of the Voice of America in 1962. He said, "We are not afraid to entrust the American people with unpleasant facts, foreign ideas, alien philosophies, and competitive values. For a nation that is afraid to let its people judge the truth and falsehood in an open market is a nation that is afraid of its people." And in some sense, our political leaders are afraid of their people, or at least of what their people will do at the ballot box, I suppose. Even the ones that I like the best have really been constrained by a certain kind of fear. And this book posits a Kennedy that is actually transformed by the near-death experience he has in Dallas to reevaluate what's important and what life's all about, which often happens with people who have that kind of an experience. And he says, you know, what we've been doing, what my family's been doing the last two decades to get a Kennedy in office, what I've been doing to keep my poll numbers up, it's a game. It's senseless. It makes no difference in terms of the well-being of the country. And I'm going to see what I can do with this country in the 5 years now that are left to me between now and 1968. I want to nudge this country's walk towards its talk. And that's the premise of the book, which makes it different from sort of the historian's straight line projection, taking the historical record that he actually did and making their best guesses what happens as a straight line. This is different than that.
This is a real veering off then. This is a Kennedy who was so changed that he decides to do things much more boldly.
In an unafraid way. You know, if he loses, it really doesn't much matter. He doesn't matter. And maybe that's what an experience that's common to people who have a near-death experience. They matter less to themselves, I think. I had one and can relate to that a little bit.
How realistic, though, politically? Because I'm remembering at this moment you telling me years ago about Jim Weaver when he was the congressmember mm-hmm. for the 4th District in Oregon, telling two audiences essentially different things. And you said, what's up there? And he said, don't be naive. This is how you get elected.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a big reason, and I like Jim Weaver. We're in the hole that we're in. You know, this sort of shared cynicism that's the way it is, you know, can't do anything about it. And that's led to disappointing leadership for most of our lives. And I guess my core belief here is there's no stone tablet somewhere that tells us what is and isn't possible in politics. What's possible is what we collectively decide is possible in our citizenship, in our voting behavior, in all kinds of ways. And that's really what I wanted to explore with this book.
Do you think that, I mean, you wrote this book 5 years ago now, or it was published 5 years ago, so probably written 7, 8 years ago, I'm thinking. So given the tenor of the times, though, I mean, do you think that if somebody tried to act like the character, the non-historical JFK and Unafraid, they'd be not shot down physically, but shot down metaphorically by the extreme polarization of our times?
I would love to find out, and I don't think the Obama example tells us very much, because he or the people around him have been afraid of the things that political leaders are afraid of.
Much more to talk about with Jeff Golden and with you as well. We're talking about JFK 50 years after the assassination, almost to the day. Jeff Golden's book imagines a world in which JFK survived the shooting. Let's talk about your thoughts, your memories of JFK on the assassination day and before, and then imagine with Jeff Golden a world where JFK survived the attack. Join us on The Exchange when we come back from this break, back with Jeff Golden and you in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our topic today is JFK, John F. Kennedy, almost 50 years to the day after his assassination. It will be 50 years on Friday. We're talking to Jeff Golden today about his novel, imagining a world in which JFK is the target of Lee Harvey Oswald's bullets, but he is not killed in the attack, and therefore is changed, transformed into a wholly different type of figure. And the world along with him. We're not only talking about Jeff Golden's book, but entertaining your thoughts about JFK and the world in which we live in now. How different it is because of his absence, how different it would have been if his presence had continued. Join us here at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. The technique that you use in Unafraid, a novel of the possible, is interesting. When you first get into it, you realize you're reading about Caroline Kennedy in your prose, and then Caroline Kennedy is reading the draft of a book written by somebody else about
She's authorized a biography of her father, mm-hmm. and the present time in which she's doing that is 2011, September of 2011, in fact. And so some of the byplay, you know, a fifth of the book, I would estimate, is in the present of 2011 between Carolyn and this hired biographer. And there's a couple reasons for that, but the main one is to try to give some notion of how these innovations, this new direction that Kennedy takes, works out. You know, it would be a boring book to say, well, Kennedy does these wildly different things and everybody lives happily ever after. That's not the country we live in. That couldn't happen. So we need some sort of a modern point of view, perspective, perch to look at the preceding three decades since the assassination attempt to give some idea of how they worked out. Some didn't work out great. Some did. That's the main reason for that device.
So the setting, though, of this of Caroline's review of the galleys for this authorized biography of JFK in September of 2011, 10 years after
2001.
Right. So did the 9/11 attacks take place in this world, you imagine?
Why don't we invite readers?
I knew you'd go. I can't believe you. I tried really hard to make sure we didn't get too far down the road.
Great try. Yeah. We try. That's a really relevant question. That's what I'll say. And let me say...
come on, Jeff, be unafraid. Let's hear what happened here.
I'm afraid to tell readers about that. In shameless self-promotion, I want folks to know that excerpts of the novel, I'm not sure they answer that particular question, but they're short excerpts of the novel at unafraidthebook.com. And I, you know, like people to spend a few minutes and see what they think, see if the book's for them.
So in your tale, Oswald does fire. So there are shots fired at the limousine. Who gets hit? Who does not?
You know, I'm afraid to tell readers that, too.
Oh, come on.
I mean, that's kind of the juice. Somebody dies. It's not JFK.
It's John Connolly, I'll say.
And there's you'll spoil it for me if I won't spoil it for myself.
That's right.
I did one interview last week with an interview back east. He said, boy, I don't mean this to be a spoiler, and then gave out a key action moment of the
That's why when we do fiction, on those rare occasions we do it, I read about halfway in. I don't want to give away the back part of the book.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah, and then I take a crack at, and Oswald is not alone, and I personally cannot believe historically Oswald was alone. So that's a whole other thing. And there are scholars on this, and I'm not one of them. And I take a crack at who his co-conspirators were. That's one of the prevalent theories. But there's a long list of people who were not sorry to see him go. Not a lot of people, but a long list of interests. Whose feathers he was ruffling, and I picked some of them for this book.
Reed, our engineer today, just typed on the screen. Was it the cigarette smoking man from X-Files?
Another spoiler.
Let's take a call here. We're talking about JFK with Jeff Golden. His book is Unafraid, a novel of the possible, imagining a world in which JFK survived Oswald's shots in Dallas in November of 1963. So your charge is to talk about what you think about a world in which JFK survived, or talk about the real world and your feelings about JFK and his presidency. Bill in Medford, welcome to The Exchange.
Good morning. I'm going to be very interested in reading Jeff Golden's book. I like Jeff's stuff, and it's going to be very interesting. But my comment is that although we do, of course, respect our presidents, I am not one of those John F. Kennedy hero worshipers. And I'll tell you why. John Kennedy was not a good liberal. I know he was a very handsome fellow and had a pretty wife, and the press went after him, of course, very highly. But he did some very bad things. He did some good things too. Among the bad things that he did was to oversee the invasion of another country called Cuba. He did things like that, and also he was very involved in the invasion of Vietnam. But very bad things. Basically, what he did was he bought into the fraud that was going on at that time, that communism was a worldwide conspiracy. He sucked into that, and of course, that was a basic error. So, Jeff, I'd like to read your book, but I think it would have been just more of the same if John Kennedy would have continued to live.
Hmm. All right. Thanks for the thoughts, Bill. Appreciate that. Your thoughts, Jeff?
Well, I think what I know of JFK's historical record is pretty complex. Bill is right that he was a cold warrior, and if you look at the 1960 campaign, he was trying to get to the right of Richard Nixon, talking in different ways about the missile gap and ways in which the Eisenhower administration was too soft on communism. At the same time, there's been more and more to emerge over the years, some of which I deal with in the book, about his back-channel communications with the Soviet Union and with Cuba, trying to find other ways to make the world work, trying to de-escalate the Cold War. And I think there's pretty good historical record on that in a pretty bold way. And there's a popular book out now called The Unspeakable about the JFK assassination. And its thesis, it's nonfiction, is that the military and the CIA were behind the assassination. And that it's quite clear that Kennedy cleaned house at the CIA after the Bay of Pigs. He thought he had done something wrong and was led to do something wrong in his belief. He talked about eliminating the CIA, and he talked about reducing Pentagon budgets because he thought the Cold War would have no good end. So I would say with Bill's got some evidence to back his notion that Kennedy was warlike, but there was a very, very strong thread running in the other direction that got more important in the later part of his presidency. And I take that further in the fiction of Unafraid.
How fun was it to write imaginary speeches for an imaginary living JFK? I mean, aside from the fact that you wrote Cuber, the way he did pronounce it with the R on the end, being able to write speeches for a president that you clearly admired.
Terrifically fun. It was like, if I have a Walter Mitty life, it might be a presidential speechwriter. But I get to set the policy in my Walter Mitty world. It was really fun. And trying to imagine the behind-the-scenes conversations in the Oval Office was fun, too. That was probably the most fun of writing the book.
I heard some other conversations, as I mentioned in the intro here, that just about every other broadcast operation, I think even the cooking channels are talking about the JFK assassination this week. Why do you suppose that there's such an urgency in thinking that there was a conspiracy? Do we just have difficulty accepting the idea that one guy with a gun could snuff the leader of the free world?
Well, I think that's the fuel for some conspiracies, and there's some that I roll my eyes at. This isn't one of them. And I, you know, again, I'm not a scholar. The book by Jim Douglas called The Unspeakable, Who Killed JFK and Why It Matters, I think is a really credible book. And, you know, I think if there's anything, and I don't want to speak too much to this because I really don't have expertise. I did some research for the book. But if there's one thing that convinces me that this was not the work of one man, it's this cover story that this nightclub operator, Jack Ruby, you know, was so inflamed by the loss of his beloved president that having to be walking by Dallas police headquarters on a Sunday morning with a loaded gun in his pocket, he lost his mind and ran past the cops and shot this man who killed his beloved president. No, that didn't happen. And so and I understand there's people who keep fortifying the lone gun theory. I don't buy it. I recommend Douglas's book.
We're talking to Jeff Golden on the Jefferson Exchange about JFK, 50 years almost to the day after the assassination. He's written a book, and it's about 5 years out there now, Unafraid, a novel of the possible that imagines a world in which JFK survived the bullets of Lee Harvey Oswald and was greatly changed by it and the world with him as well. So we'll talk not only to Jeff about what he's written and your thoughts as well. We'll take your comments about what you think about JFK's legacy, real or imagined, in the world that Jeff Golden imagines or one of your own. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Dennis in Eugene, welcome to the Exchange with Jeff Golden.
Well, hello, you two Jeffs.
Hi. Hey, good morning.
Hey, I got a little scenario for you here. A lot of people won't remember this, but in 1959... Fidel Castro appeared on the Jack Parr and the Ed Sullivan shows. Mm. And Fidel Castro in America at that time was seen as a freedom fighter. Mm-hmm. And someone that, you know, sort of was what America was all about. And anybody that would want to watch those interviews, they could on YouTube, by the way. So here's my question. In 62, we had the Cuban Missile Crisis, which is just 3 years later, and if Kennedy would have been on his toes and actually suited to be a president, instead of alienating Castro, he would have made friends with him, and we would have never, ever had that situation, and Cuba would be a democracy now. What do you think?
We wouldn't have the Cuban Missile Crisis. I agree with that. And Cuba would be different. And I think Cuba has been repressive in large part because it's been beat up by most of the Western world over the years. I mean, it's a complex thing. I do think Kennedy would have done something unprecedented if he had said, we're ready to embrace Castro and this revolution, because Castro overthrew not just Batista, but the United Fruit Company and others who, like today, were financed presidential politics. So he would have bit the hand that fed him in the biggest possible way to do that. But the outcome would have been different, and it might have come out the way you say.
Dennis, thanks for the call on that, which jogs another memory. I was standing in New York City outside Penn Station with my father one time, and he on the 7th Avenue side of Penn Station, and he pointed to the hotel, then called the Statler Hilton across the street, and said, yeah, I remember standing out here in 1959 with a big crowd in the street, and up there on that balcony, mm-hmm. Fidel Castro. Mm-hmm. And my eyes went, what?
Yeah, he was a rock star for a little while, and he was not a Marxist then. We sort of helped him get that way by being so hostile. We sort of drove him into Khrushchev's arms.
Let us take another call about JFK, real or imagined. Andy in Ashland, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jeff Golden.
Hi, my two favorite Jeffs.
Thank you.
I just serendipitously picked up a copy of Jeff's book in the Ashland Library at their book sale. I was drawn by the cover, and lo and behold, it's written by my friend Jeff Golden. And, Jeff, I'm just really impressed with the creativity. And one of the things I wanted to comment on was how much this, I think, has haunted our generation. I'm 66 years old, and it made me realize just how much this has sort of been running in the background of my life, the possibility of what could have been had JFK remained president. I just wonder if you could speak a little bit more about your feelings about that. And I know you've talked a lot to other members of our generation and what your sense is, what the general pulse is on that, and maybe where young people might be missing something around that. Hmm. I'll take your comments off the air.
All right. Thanks for the call, Andy.
Well, I'll say just a couple things. I think, Andy, you opened a big topic there. I do think it had an impact, even beyond the huge impact that we're acknowledging this week as a nation. I think it had an impact on our generation that was mostly discouraging. And you hear people say very cynical things about it, that if someone really breaks with the powers that be, this is what happens. And I don't know about that, but I think there's a lid on our ambitions and our sense of what's possible and our energy for real social change that has something to do with this assassination. And I'll say, one thing that Kennedy, and again, I take this somewhat from the historical record, Kennedy was not willing to go public with it, but he was looking for a peaceful alternative to the Cold War. It's not like he was friendly with Nikita Khrushchev, but he pictured something different, and he didn't think that America ultimately could be secure by force of arms alone. And pretty much force of arms has characterized our strategy for security since then. So I believe something different would have happened that that reduced the number of people in the world who have so little to lose that they'll strap bombs to themselves and blow people up. I do think that would have been different.
Khrushchev is mentioned in the speech we were talking about a bit ago, that the imagined speech that Kennedy delivered from the Oval Office, in which you write Cuba the way he said it. But there are italics, I notice, in the book about when Kennedy says the United States is a nation that keeps its promises. Why italicize that phrase?
Why? And you take me back memory lane here. I think I pictured him at the podium really stopping to lay a lot of emphasis on that. He was a pretty gifted speaker. And, were I his speechwriter, I would have put italics on it and say, slow down, really drive this home, and then go on. I think that's what happened there.
Well, I'm also thinking about the context of the period in which the book was written. I mean, this is during the George W. Bush administration, and I think there might have been a sense permeating the writing process that they were not highly regarded for keeping promises at that time.
I was not a George W. Bush fan. I'm not real impressed with our record for keeping promises under any administration in my lifetime. So I don't think that's what prompted it.
A real sense of a world, and not just for the United States, but obviously because of the influence the United States has on the rest of the world, and certainly did in 1963, a very different world arising out of John F. Kennedy surviving the assassination as imagined in the book Unafraid. It really kind of sinks in when you get to chapter 12 and you're reading about the elections in Saudi Arabia that might turn out the first woman leader in Saudi Arabia. At this point, you're going, boy, just a couple of bullets missing made a huge difference in the world.
Yeah. Well, they say a butterfly's wings, flapping of wings does that. And
chaos
certainly,
theory.
This was bigger, right. This was bigger than that. Yeah, I don't really explain how a woman might get elected leader of Saudi Arabia, but I do pepper the present day with a lot of things that are different to try to give a sense that the outfall of 8 years of Kennedy would have created a different world.
So was it more like just letting ideas flow from the concept of a Kennedy survivor? I mean, he didn't go to like what was it, that series of books, the Foundation Trilogy by Isaac Asimov, the psychohistory or whatever it was, where they could figure out what was going to happen based on certain events. You didn't go through that process of trying to flick the switches of history and figure out, well, if he's alive, then this would happen, and then this would happen, this would happen. I mean, did you go through the whole set of dominoes?
Almost a geometric problem.
Right.
No, the structure, the building blocks are the people, the characters we knew, and there were some really big, memorable characters in those days. So I did go, not tracing backwards, but going, so if Kennedy lives any... stands up to J. Edgar Hoover, which is the very first part of the book. How does Hoover react? How do the people who support Hoover react? How does the nation react? And, you know, it also let me have some imaginary conversations that were really fun to write, including an all-night conversation between Joe Kennedy, the uber capitalist, and Fidel Castro, the Marxist of the time, to talk about how different and similar their approach to life was.
You had all kinds of fun. We will talk more with Jeff Golden about Unafraid, a novel of the possible, imagining a world in which JFK survives the assassination attempt in November of 1963. You can join our conversation, not just about the content of his book, but imagine the world in which John F. Kennedy would have lived, or talk about the one in which he did not, and your feelings about that, and your feelings about November 22nd, 1963. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange when we come back in a minute five. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about JFK, the real JFK who died almost 50 years ago to the day. That was November 22nd, 1963. And we're also talking about JFK as he might have been had he survived the assassination. That is the topic of Jeff Golden's book, Unafraid, a novel of the possible. Yes, the Jeff Golden who was once a Jackson County commissioner and was once the host of this program. He's the author of Unafraid, out in 2008. We're talking about the context of JFK as he might have been had he survived, and the JFK we did know, and your thoughts and your feelings about the assassination, where you were that day and what your life was like at that time. All these things up for discussion on the exchange today. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. You were just talking about interesting parts of the book, the context of J. Edgar Hoover and the JFK interplay. And how much do you want to tell us about what happens to J. Edgar Hoover?
Well, not a lot, other than it seems pretty clear that J. Edgar Hoover sustained unique power in Washington, D.C. out of fear, the fear of political figures, of what he could reveal about them. And so it's sort of a classic bully, and what happens with bullies who get, when you stand up to them, is that they kind of go away, and that's kind of what happens.
Yeah, well, we won't describe exactly how they go away, but that's certainly an interesting part of the book. JFK, as you imagine him here, surviving the assassination attempt, the winning of a second term, how big a victory did you see?
Well, that's another thing. Another part of the premise is not just that his whole perspective is changed by his experience in Dallas, but that he gets more political capital than almost anyone in our memory. You know, he came to office with a lot of capital, and some people would say shallow reasons, the glamour, the beautiful wife, the... You know, we were just intrigued as heck with him. He's closest thing to American royalty that we've ever had. Well, and then the sympathy of the nation, the shock of the nation that someone would try to kill their president, and their relief that he survives is substantial. And we actually saw that play out for a little while in the attempt on President Reagan's life. His political score went way, way up. So Kennedy is enjoying in 1964 and 65 an unprecedented level of popularity for a variety of reasons. And he has no trouble dispatching with Barry Goldwater in 1964.
No trouble at all. And we'll save the numbers for the people who want to read the book. Interesting, though, to think about. You just mentioned the Ronald Reagan assassination attempt. He actually did survive a bullet wound in 1981.
Uh-huh. A couple months in office.
Right. And I was in journalism school at the time, and it was one of those weird things where, yes, you do remember where you were and what was happening. And I remember somebody was driving a convertible down Broadway in Columbia, Missouri, and I was, I think, in the city county building working on some story, and I could hear even the Doppler effect as the radio kind of faded out as it went down the street. But it was, I could hear something about shots fired. The president was like, what was that?
Mm-hmm.
And didn't have a chance to check out for a while longer. So you certainly do remember what happened at the time, as does Sandy in Mount Shasta. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Jeff Golden about JFK as he survived the assassination in the book and in the real world.
Yeah, boy, great program. This really brings back, I remember exactly where I was and, you know, exactly how I felt the moment it was announced. I think it was Walter Cronkite that the president was dead, right after it happened. And I, too, believe that this had an enormous impact on our country, and that one from which I don't think we've ever fully recovered, and I think part of that is that we don't understand, we're only beginning to understand the nature of trauma and what it does to human beings. And, you know, we've been kind of on this trajectory ever since of one trauma after another. We never really fully recover from. And one of those traumas, of course, was the Vietnam War. And there's been a claim that I've never been able to ascertain the truth of for years, that Kennedy would have, had he lived, found a way to pull us out of the Vietnam War before it turned into the gargantuan death fest that it became. I'd like to know the author's opinion about that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for that, Sandy. Appreciate it.
There has been so much written by historians trying to project, you know, forget about the near-death experience, project what he actually would have done. One fine book about that is The Best and the Brightest, a number of years ago by David Halberstam. And there is conflicting evidence. And I read a fair bit on this, and the preponderance of the evidence tells me that we would have been out of Vietnam. Not quickly. We would have gotten burned there, but it would have been a lot sooner than 1975 with a lot less bloodshed on both sides. That's what the historical record tells me. Arguments can be made in the other direction based on the historical record.
So what elements in the historical record do lead you to that conclusion? Because we just a few minutes ago talked about Kennedy as a cold warrior.
Mm-hmm.
Had a lot to prove, that he was going to be tough on whoever looked like they were lined up with the guys on the other side of the Iron Curtain.
Kennedy traveled, and this I found this very interesting, unique among members of Congress, Kennedy traveled to Southeast Asia in the 50s about three times and spent quite a bit of time there. He was quite interested in it. And he, when the French failed at Dien Bien Phu, he said, Western powers are not going to be able to control Southeast Asia militarily. He wrote about that. He gave a speech, I think still as a representative, but maybe as a senator, to that effect. There have emerged conversations that Ted Sorensen wrote about before his death about Vietnam and about Kennedy's eagerness to find an exit strategy, because politically he didn't think he could just stand up and withdraw, because all of the rhetoric about, or all of the argument about the communist domino theory was so strong right then, and he wasn't willing to do that. He had mixed things to say about what he would do after his 1964 reelection. But he did not think, he thought Vietnam's would require a permanent heavy military occupation. And he said, there's got to be a better way.
Jeff Golden's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His novel about the idea of JFK surviving the assassination in November of 1963, Unafraid, a novel of the possible. We're inviting you to join us as well with your memories of JFK as you remember them, as you remember that day, and your thoughts, perhaps, about what the world might have been like had JFK survived, as Jeff Golden imagines in the book. Final time, I'll give you the numbers, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the region, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Forgot to ask about the second term. Was LBJ still on the ticket?
Boy, I can't remember, Jeff.
No. No, you had Bobby Kennedy as the new vice president, which would have been an interesting move when you talk about almost royalty.
Of saving people the trouble of reading this book.
Not the whole book. There's so much more to go on here, which leads me to the next question then, which is, do you imagine the progression of people who follow Kennedy in office? I mean, do you imagine, I don't know, does Nelson Rockefeller win in 68 or something?
The book ends, or the old story ends, on election night in 1968, which takes well into the wee hours of the morning, as Walter Cronkite is finally deciding the returns from New York State, which is determining the outcome between Richard Nixon and William O. Douglas as a Democratic nominee. And I invite readers to take it from there with their own imagination.
The major premise then, which is that JFK is changed by surviving the assassination, and that the world changes around him as well. The country certainly responds differently to him. Did you see a change in politics generally, that just by JFK acting differently, acting unafraid for the remaining 5 years of his term, then is the whole tenor of politics in America changed?
It is, because, you know, our presidents and maybe the leader of the opposing party in Congress are kind of the poles of the political debate, and where they stake in, put their stake in the ground, defines the range of the debate. And we can see that today. You know, you ask, what kind of a debate would we be having on health care today if Obama had at the beginning said, as he said during the campaign, a single-payer health system is the way to go here, and that had been his stake. And the Republicans would have responded probably differently than they did now, I don't know. But that makes for a whole different spectrum of political conversation. And I want to stress, it's not like everybody bought it in my novel. It's not like everybody says, oh, he's so wise, let's just do exactly what he says. It's not quite what Americans do in politics. But it stirs things up towards a different outcome.
So let us talk about the legacy of the real Kennedy then, too, because I know this is still a great point of argument. And apparently historians themselves have said Kennedy is probably one of the more overrated presidents in history. Why do we give him credit for being great? Is it because he was taken from us so quickly? For that matter, would we feel the same about Abraham Lincoln if he hadn't been felled by an assassin's bullet? Mm.
Well, there's a lot more of record to judge Abraham Lincoln on in office than John Kennedy. He was only in office 1,000 days in a complex time. I would say that's not enough data to make a real full judgment. It's very clear that a lot of the adulation of him, or a lot of the positive rating, doesn't have to do with policy, but does have to do with the glamour and the sense of hope that he gave. And that's, I think I would stress that. There were a lot of people who didn't much care for his politics who were devastated by his death, because whatever else he did, he projected a sense of hope and idealism about this country. And that's what died that day, largely. I think that's at the core of the big thing here. And part of it was, you know, sort of, you could call it shallow, the glamour, the Hollywood nature of it. But there was a, you know, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. That just shook us to our core. And maybe it sounds, you know, trite now, but we really believed it. We really thought of an America where that was a founding principle. That was a core principle. And so a lot of it isn't, you know, if you dissect the record and go, well, he had this legislation and opposed this and favored this and made this speech, it doesn't grab, it doesn't really capture why he is so big in our history and why it's so big in our mind. He set an energetic stance for what it means to be an American that was fairly unique. In some ways, I'd say Ronald Reagan did some of the same, even though his politics were quite different. But when it was cut down in its prime in Kennedy's case, we have, like the caller said, a trauma that we haven't fully recovered from.
Certainly the youngest elected president at that time, died at the age of 47, so hadn't even reached 50. And yet you look at the differences. I know I did when I was in the single digits assessing the presidency of LBJ, thinking about, okay, well, there's this old bald guy who's the president now, and yet we had this other guy then. And as a child, it certainly appealed to me. I guess on that level, I'm working on the assumption that more people were attracted to the presidency and perhaps the politics themselves by this person holding the office.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you can say that there's some things that aren't very wholesome or deep about that. But he gave us a sense of ourselves as Americans that really no one has since.
Really? Not even Reagan?
I can see an argument for Reagan. Yeah, you know, it was different. And the Camelot sheen gave it an extra power. But, you know, I never heard anything like, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country in the Reagan years. You know, I'm biased like anybody else, but there was a quality. Reagan had an inspirational quality that if anyone deserves to be in that same category in our lifetime, it'd be Reagan.
I'm thinking of the comparison, though, between ask not what your country can do for you and Reagan's statement about government is not the solution to the problem, government is the problem. Notice the difference just in the use of the term. Country in one sense, government in the other.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good point. I like that.
So how have the sales of the book been over the course of the time it's been out?
Okay. I'd like more people to read it. It's part of the reason I'm doing radio right now, which allows, if you'll allow me a 20-second pitch, there are excerpts of the book, six excerpts of the book that are each a couple pages long at unafraidthebook.com, and people can see if they'd like to read the whole book.
You have written other books since this time, haven't you?
I have written a book that just came out for a group called the American Leadership Forum, about leadership, about modern leadership and the inner path that great leaders have to take.
There was another one you wrote, and there's certainly a similar strain that runs through your books. The other one of the other ones was As If We Were Adults.
As If We Were Grown-Ups. Uh-huh. And that's nonfiction. But I'm trying to do the same thing, which is probe people to consider what's possible in our politics, to consider the possibility that we're shooting too low. And that we can demand more, and that's more than throwing tantrums when we don't like something that happens, but that we can step up to the kind of citizenship that the founders imagined, which is harder work than in any other system. The founders said, let's try this crazy thing where people govern themselves. And if we want easy duty, we probably aren't the right folks to do that. And this is, you know, my sense is that we have collectively decided that what's possible in politics is pretty small and mean.
Well, which brings up the point that, I mean, how do you become the person who tries to rise above a state of politics where the general level of discourse is did not, did to? I mean, are you essentially bringing a knife to a gunfight if you try to be the person who's more eloquent and reasonable?
Well, I don't think so. You know, it depends on, it's about inspiring with people with possibilities and in no way trying to give a sense that you are going to solve it for them yourself, personally. You have some ideas, you need robust ideas. But we know of leaders, and not just Kennedy, who gave us a pretty good sense, a more noble sense about participating in public service and public life. And he wasn't the Mr. Answer Man, but he had a vision and conveyed a vision that that we can be a great country, and that's what's missing.
Jeff Golden's novel is called Unafraid, a novel of the possible. It imagines JFK surviving the assassination and a very different JFK and a very different world as a result. Jeff, always great to see you.
Really great to talk to you, Jeff. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks for joining us. Tomorrow on The Exchange at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about possible changes to Oregon's liquor sales system. We'll talk about the expansion of a farm training program for younger people. And then we'll talk to Tim Manley, who has taken fairy tales and turned them into something quite different in his book, Alice in Tumblerland. Tumblr is in the website. That's all tomorrow on The Jefferson Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duren. Our student assistant, Reed Newland. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.